All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Rob and Terry Retro Review with Rob and Terry. I got the name wrong myself. We switched it last week. You'd think I'd be the one who know it, and I didn't. How you doing tonight, Terry?
I'm good. How you doing?
Outstanding. We had cruising along with some great weather, and then just got hit with this cold front for 2 days.
Stupid.
I agree. I think the person in charge of the weather needs to be fired.
Ooh.
it's not working out real well. I'm not liking it. You go from sunburn yesterday to frostbite tonight.
It's stupid. Illinois weather is just so weird.
There's not
I want to go somewhere where the weather stays the same all the time. I'll travel to the bad weather.
Right. I've noticed as I've been on this earth longer that Illinois doesn't have a whole lot going for it.
No. One great thing, though, like I may have mentioned before, is the weather here is so stupid. The stuff we have around here ain't that great. So we have this terrible little area. Then we go on vacation and makes our vacations that much more better and much more memorable. I mean, people living in Florida or Hawaii or something like that, they're probably thinking, oh, I don't ever want to leave, but yeah, I want to go on vacation because I'm tired of this. But everywhere I go is horrible.
That's a good point.
We appreciate it more because we live in such a bad area.
You know what they probably do is they probably go to the northeast in the fall to see the trees change color and all that stuff.
Yeah, with four layers of clothes on.
Right. All right, well, let's kind of get into what we're going to talk about this week. I got a couple rants today, Terry. I got a couple of rants to fill it up. One of them's not too bad, though. We'll start off with the easy one first. It's not really a rant. It's more of a funny observation. Joe Biden's dog needs to go. Yeah, that dog is out of control.
He can't be trusted.
It's bitten like two people. He's bitten two people. He's pooping on the floor. And he can't be trusted. That dog is running wild.
We'll have to come up with something for him. Just have to put him on a leash in his own little area where he can run around playing on the side of the White House lawn. Because, yeah, that's getting kind of out of hand if it's happened this much, this quick.
How do you like to be the one to try to chastise the president's dog?
Gosh, we'll leave that up to Mrs. Biden.
Yeah. The Secret Service has got to be like, man, I went through I've got a master's degree in political science, you know, after training with special operations for so many years, and I've got to follow along this dog that's trying to bite people. That would be a very, very, very tough job.
I hate my life. So, yeah. Yeah, it's got to be a treat just trying to keep those dogs and that dog in line because it's like, what the heck? It's like, I'm here to protect the president, and all of a sudden, I gotta watch this dog nonstop. Won't stop pooping, won't stop biting. And it's funny. It makes for good headlines. I like it, so.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff, man. It is definitely crazy stuff. It's funny. I mean, can you imagine, though, what it would be like if that was Trump's dog?
Oh, jeez.
How the media would be acting right now.
Oh, see what Trump did? See his dog? Yep. Yeah. That directly reflects how the president is.
Yeah, I didn't even like Trump, and I laugh at the fact that this would have been a huge deal if it was Trump's dog.
Oh, sure.
All right, let's go on to the next one. This is actually a rant of mine that just, I probably am in the minority on this one. I don't know if it bothers the other people as much as it bothers me. I hate prepaying for gas. I can understand it and forgive it if you're like a just off the interstate gas station. You know, you probably got to worry about drive offs and that sort of thing. But just a gas station in town, like here, I don't mean to disparage this place, but every Casey's now is a prepaid gas station. Even the one here in Kewaunee. And it just drives me nuts because I don't like the idea of being like, well, I want to fill my tank. And I don't trust enough that if I go in and say, I'm going to put 40 on it, they don't charge me 40 and only give me $32 worth of gas. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you pay in cash every time?
No, I use a debit card.
So, but they don't have the credit card at the
I don't tank, use the pay at the pump because they put a hold on your card for, you know, I don't want to get to a situation where I have to use my card and it's on hold because the pay at the pump didn't work right.
No, that's how I've always done it.
Yeah.
Never had a problem with it.
But really? Okay. I just don't trust it.
Yeah, if they don't have the pay at the pump and they make you prepay, that would be extremely annoying.
But that's one of my rants, and it just, I don't know why, it just makes me a lot madder than it should. Just the annoyance of it, the assumption that they treat everybody like a criminal until you prove them wrong. You know, I just don't like that. I don't like being treated like I'm going to drive off without paying just because somebody did one time.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I'm sure they have an attitude at the counter, too, for those kind of people, just because they run into it so much that everybody gets treated bad.
It's along the lines of, like, you remember when you were in basic training and everybody gets punished if somebody does, one person does something wrong?
Yeah.
I hated it then. I hate it now. And I don't think I'll ever really like it. I don't think it'll ever be something. Go ahead.
Speaking of basic training, I got a book for you to read and everybody else out there. It's called, I can't say it, but Bleep My Drill Sergeant Said. And I got it for a birthday or Christmas, and I just got done reading it not too long ago. It's a very short book, and it's just filled with a bunch of different quotes of drill sergeants' wisdom that they pass along to the trainees. And it's pretty funny.
It is. Sounds good.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check that one out. So you just had a birthday recently, didn't you?
Yep, last Friday. It was great.
How old are you now?
Yeah, 38.
38
years young.
You're getting old, dude.
I know. I'm tired of it, but hey, I got to eat Chinese food and kick back and relax and put my feet up on my birthday. It was great. Loved it.
Well, that's good. You're not that far from 40. Are you dreading it, or does it not bother you? Don't care?
Just one. You only got one life to live. Enjoy it, no matter what. It's gonna happen.
None of my birthdays really bothered me. Like 30 didn't bother me. 40, I didn't really care. 31. Was a weirdo because I'm like, holy crap, this is not stopping. It just keeps going.
Yep.
That was the only one that kind of weirded me out.
You know, it's getting bad when you forget how old you are. That's one. I had the other, before I turned 38, probably a couple months before, yeah, I'm 38 years old. I was like, oh, wait a minute. No, I'm still 37.
I got a, here's another rant. This might take a minute, but I'm sure you are aware. It's been all over the news. It's everywhere. Lil Nas X and his Satan shoes.
Why?
Exactly. Here's the thing. You know, it's obviously meant to tick people off, and it's working. And it is creepy as can be. You're gonna put real human blood in the sole of a tennis shoe? Come on, what kind of message are you trying to send? You're gonna do a limited edition run of 666 shoes and then act like, I can't believe somebody would get upset about this? Give me a break. You wanted to make people mad. You did it on purpose. And here's the problem, Terry. Here's what bothers me, I think, even more than anything else, is the fact that we gotta put up with this no talent, third rate rapper forever now. Yep. He could have gone the way of Psy, who got Gangnam Style, or Baha Men with the Who Let the Dogs Out. He could have been the one-hit wonder with the... And it, by the way, his one hit was the stupidest song I've ever heard. The most annoying song in the history of music.
It gets old pretty quick.
Oh, my gosh. And so now we got to listen to this dude now. Now he's got notoriety. Now he's a figure. He's a somebody now. And we got to put up with him more than anything else. That's what bothers me more than any of all. Because he's just some idiot young dude who's going to... Now, I went ahead and watched the video that these shoes are supposed to be a tie-in for. And come on. Did you watch it?
No.
Oh, God. It's pathetic. It really is. He gives the devil a lap dance.
That's cute.
Yeah, isn't it? Can't imagine why people would be provoked.
Yeah, bad publicity, still publicity. So,
it's got something like 50 million views on YouTube. So he's not hurting. It'll be over 100 by weekend. And now he's now he's gonna be a hero to some. He's gonna be a martyr for the cause because people are gonna be upset because he is who he is, and they're gonna try to make him out to be some kind of important artist who has something to say. No, he is a no talent hack who got lucky. And the fact that his song was number one, it's only because he remixed it like four different times and they still counted it as number one. He did one with Billy Ray Cyrus. He did one version with Justin Bieber. He probably did a dance remix on it too or something, just to that stupid, annoying song. And so now, like I said, we're going to have to put up with him forever.
Coming soon, the Kenny G remix.
Yeah, it's just so annoying. And I had posted on Facebook, I said, I have, you know, here's my response to the Satan shoes, and it's just a link to Stripers, to Hell with the Devil. So I got like one like, so I don't think everybody even got what I was trying to say.
Gosh.
But I liked it, and that's really all that matters to me.
Yeah, I suppose.
Any other thoughts on it, Terry?
No, it was dumb. Yeah, it was dumb, period.
All right, let's move on to one more rant here I got, which will lead us into sports. It breaks my heart to see how the Cubs are doing Anthony Rizzo. They lowballed him a ridiculous contract extension offer, which is insultingly low.
How low was it?
14 a year. For it was half of what Goldschmidt got to go to the Cardinals, I think, total value. Which I know, I'm not saying Rizzo's better than Goldschmidt. I'm not going to get into that debate. But they're in the same league. He's not half of what Goldschmidt's worth.
Yeah, there's a lot of players that make more than 14 a year that aren't as good as Rizzo, period. No.
It's sad because you can see him getting ready to run him off. I fully expect if they're not leading the division with like a serious playoff run by the time the trade deadline comes, I got a feeling Bryant, maybe even Baez gone. Rizzo.
Ooh.
Yeah, they're just going to go. It'll be a fire sale.
That will kill the Cubs if Baez leaves.
Oh, it'll break my heart, Terry. That'll be the hardest thing. I love Baez. Is my favorite, one of my favorite Chicago athletes in a long time.
Yeah. He's flashy, but he can back it up.
Right. That's what I love about him. He plays like he's a kid. And, you know, that phrase gets thrown around every so often about players. But Baez, the no-look tags at second base.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching him play. And it's hard to find a baseball player that you love watching play that keeps you entertained. Baseball is a very slow-moving sport. I'll jump to the other side, too, and look at it from the devil's point of view here. Like, Pujols. Every time that dude stepped to the plate, you're like, okay, something could happen here. And so, I mean, there's guys like that. When those come along, you cannot let those guys go. Not when they're in their prime anyway. I understand the Cardinals letting Pujols go because money concerns. But
that, and they noticed the decline. They noticed it was going to come. And when his last year with the Cardinals, he didn't crack 300. That was like, hey, he's looking for a big contract. We're going to offer him something. Ain't going to be as awesome as what the Angels offered him. That, and it come out later that apparently the Cardinals just weren't communicating very well with him at the time. So
right.
He said, well, I guess I'm not that appreciated. See ya. But, I mean, he's doing well for himself. He still belted a bunch of homers. He's still going to be on the all-time list for a lot of reasons.
Right.
But, yeah, that's
a lot. You think he cracks the top three? You think he catches A-Rod?
For home runs?
Yeah.
No.
No.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But he's creeping up there on a lot of things. And I'd like to see him do well. I mean, I don't care if he's an Angel now. He was a Cardinal for, 10 years?
Yeah.
Man, he put up the majority of his numbers with the Cardinals. He was almost like 500 home runs.
It's like watching Montana when he dressed up for the Chiefs for a couple years. Yeah, he was for the Chiefs there at the end, but you always think of him as a 49er.
All right.
That baseball season starts tomorrow, Terry. What's your optimism level on your beloved Cardinals for this year?
They're going to win the division. They are going to win the division. They got a good team. We'll see how the pitching holds up. As long as people aren't getting hurt, they should be all right. But yeah, if they can get those bats going, they're going to be a hard team to stop because they got a lot of protection in there and they can put some runs on the board.
Outstanding.
Yeah, I was looking here. Pujols, he's got 34 home runs to catch A-Rod. He might do it, but That's kind of a hard sell.
A-Rod's in third spot, right?
Yep. Or four. He's in the fourth spot behind
fourth.
Ruth, Aaron, and Bonds.
Well, how did I forget about Bonds?
Yeah. He's 114 behind Babe Ruth in RBIs. He's third all time, which is pretty sick. He's 15th in hits. He'll probably land somewhere around 9th or 10th all time on that. Doubles, he's probably going to stay where he's at, 5th. And then he'll probably move up to 10th or 11th all time in runs. It's pretty good stuff.
So we are talking he is an absolute all-time great.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the numbers back it up.
Statistically, no doubt about it.
Yeah, you can't argue the numbers.
Yep. Yeah. I'm not so optimistic about my Cubs. They've been on fire in spring training, but we know what spring training is. Spring training is spring training.
Exactly. I don't trust anything that happens in spring training because it never pans out in the regular season. Never does.
Right.
It always ends up being different.
And here's the thing. Every person in that dugout saw how Rizzo got treated this week.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
Yeah, I don't feel like they're going to be putting forth their best effort this year.
No, this is going to be I'm going to make sure I stay, you know, get mine type of a deal. And can you blame them?
Nope.
You're talking about millions of dollars on the table. Million for Baez could be looking at one of those, you know, huge,
yeah,
$300 million style contracts.
Yeah, if he puts out a good year, he's definitely getting one.
So, it's going to be tough on Ross. I feel bad for Ross. He's going to have to wrangle this thing together and hold that team together in the dugout. But, man, what a slap in the face to Rizzo and Cubs fans everywhere. I don't understand that. I know that sports are business. Sports are big business. And there's business decisions that have to be made that are unpopular. But how do you do that to the guy who's been the face of your franchise? He's the only one that was there when they lost 100 games one season. He was ready to fight the entire Cincinnati Reds dugout in defense of his team, and you're going to treat that guy like that.
Right.
I don't understand it.
No, neither. I almost want to point at the fact that COVID happened and they lost a lot of money. So they're not giving out big giant contracts, but that's still pretty low considering what everybody else is making.
None of these guys owning these teams are going to be on food stamps anytime soon.
No.
I'm not going to feel too sorry for them.
No.
And, you know, it makes me sad. It makes me sad because as a Cubs fan, you know how long we went without a World Series, and you know the story of the Cubs. And when we finally got it, and with a young team, we thought we were beginning of something really special, a nice run, and it just didn't pan out the way we thought it would. I mean, we went to the NLCS a couple times, you know, even after, but it just did not go the way we wanted it to. And you know, it's sad from a Cubs fan's point of view because we know how long it could be till the next one. And I think we just watching that window get slammed shut is man, I don't like it. But
they had some opportunities after that. What was it? 2016 they won?
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah, they've had opportunities since then, and I just feel like they squandered them. They were a good team. They were a solid team.
You know, and they'll still be competitive this year because they do still have talent. I think their pitching is going to get pretty weak. They obviously let Yu Darvish go, and you got Arrieta back from Philly, but it's not the Arrieta from 2016.
No.
And so
it was a freak then.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to see. All right, well, let's move on to something even just as depressing. How did your bracket fare? We got the final four going on right now. Where are you sitting?
Oh, I'm doing terrible, just as good as I was during the last podcast. However, let's take a look. I am doing better than, 35.8% of the country, so.
Hey.
I don't want to brag, but I'm not in the bottom third.
That's an accomplishment, man.
But no, I'm looking at this, my wife's bracket. She only got one pool this year, which was a damn shame because she is leading by a ton. I mean, she's
really
got the most points and she's got the most possible points left. She has Gonzaga winning it all, and Gonzaga's still dancing. And they get to play the 11 seed UCLA this weekend. So, I mean, they're probably like, thank goodness we're not having to play Michigan.
Right.
UCLA, they're just scrappy. They're getting it done, but I think Gonzaga's going to run all over them. It's going to be Gonzaga and Baylor in the finals.
Man, I remember the days when Gonzaga was the Cinderella story. Now they're the powerhouse.
They never got there. They never got to the end. Or never won the end. I guess they did make it once. But, yeah, they still have not won one. And, yeah, so, yeah, I click on hers. Total points right now, she's in the 89.8th percentile.
Right. That's
pretty darn good. Way to go, Sarah.
That is
every year. Every year. There was one year, I think John Kerry. No, it wasn't John. Mitt Romney had a bracket that was, like, in the top 500 of the country or something like that.
It wasn't even Obama?
No. Mitt Romney, of all people. But then I looked at it. Sarah was, like, 10 points higher than him.
Really?
Wow. Her bracket was so good. And her strategy is just to pick the most pompous-sounding universities. So, of course, she had Duke winning it all. And guess what? They won it all that year.
That's hilarious. I had a Facebook memory come up this week where this last week from, I don't even remember how many years ago it was, but that I noticed that my bracket at the time was ahead of Obama's. Oh, I remember, man. I was pretty happy about that.
Screenshot.
Send
it to everybody.
All right. But well, yeah, like I said, I didn't fill out the bracket, so I don't have a dog in this fight.
Yeah. I'm glad it's going to end soon and baseball's going to get started. I'm ready.
Yeah, even I'm ready for baseball too. I'm not excited about the Cubs prospects, but I am looking forward to hearing the crack of that bat again.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the ivy on the walls at Wrigley soon, and I'm looking forward to it. And who knows, anything can happen in sports.
Anything can happen. And I mean, when a team like the Marlins and the Rays that has just no money can still pull off World Series wins.
Yeah.
Anything can happen.
I guess what I'm hoping is kind of one of those major league situations where the Cubs in the dugout are like, they're not going to bring us back. They're not going to pay us. Let's just go out and win it one time and then take off. So I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right. Well, hey, we're just going to get right into it then because we got a lot to talk about on our retro review. Retro review this week is the Friends episode from season 4 called The One with the Embryos. It aired on January 15th, 1998. Terry, how old were you in 98?
15.
14 at that time. Were you watching Friends at this time, live?
Live, yeah, sometimes if I had the opportunity. But, man, I caught most of my Friends syndicated.
Yeah. I didn't watch it when I was in the Army because I didn't have cable and I didn't really have a TV as much in the Army. And I got out in 97. In June of 97. So I probably started picking it up round about, I was picked up watching it live, I think probably in 99. It was maybe 2 years after I got out of the Army. So then I caught reruns. And then, of course, what really got me was when they started putting out the seasons on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all 10 seasons on DVD. And then, of course, when the streaming came around, Netflix had Friends for a long time. So I just have it on. So, but this is by far, and it's not even really, there's not even really a close second as to my favorite Friends episode.
Yeah, this is definitely my number one. I've always liked it. I listened to the commentary recently when I rewatched the episode, and the writers and the director on there even said this is probably our favorite episode, if one of our favorites.
It's nothing short of a perfect episode.
It was wonderful. It had everything.
Yep, I agree. For those who are listening who have not seen it, the premise is simply this. They call it The One with the Embryos because Phoebe has agreed to be a surrogate for her long-lost brother who recently came back into his life and his new wife, who was quite older than him, and was Eric Foreman's mom from That 70s Show. And so
Deborah Jo Rupp.
Yep, they need her help in order to have their baby. So she agrees, and she's going in to get implanted. While she is at the doctor's office, the rest of the six friends end up in a contest with Rachel and Monica against Joey and Chandler to determine who knows the most about the other. This all stemmed from the fact that Joey claimed at the beginning of the episode that he knew that because it was Monica's laundry day that she was wearing her old lady underpants. And so She's like, that doesn't matter. That still does not mean that you know us better than we know you. And of course, this brought in the competitive nature, especially for Monica, who's hyper competitive. And that plays into one of the best moments in the entire series. And so Ross gets involved and decides to create a quiz show style competition to see who knows the other better. What did the writers have to say about Ross's involvement? Do they have anything to say about that when you're watching the commentary?
Well, I'm gonna mention it as you go through it. I got just one thing that the writers said about Ross in there, but I'll mention that as when you get to it.
All right, so like I said, that's the basic premise of the show. What starts off is just a friendly, you know, I think it was a $100 bet that started it, and they progressed on from there. As they went through the first round and got into, they were tied at the end of the first round. Ross announces that he has prepared for just this situation and whips out a lightning round stack of cards with a lightning bolt hand drawn on the back of it to let them know, and they were. They upped the stakes, and the cold open of this show involved a rooster crowing, waking up Monica and Rachel. They go over to confront Chandler and Joey, and their response is, well, the chick is going through some changes.
Yep, because they have a chick and a duck as pets.
Right, so the chick, we think he's becoming a rooster, and then he crows again, like, but we're getting a second opinion. So, as they're sitting there and they're upping these stakes, Monica decides that one they should bet. He says, if we win, they get rid of the birds. And the guys come back by Chandler's suggestion to say, well, if we win, we get your apartment.
Yep.
And Monica agrees. Rachel, not too excited about the prospect, but Monica kind of twists her arm into going along with it.
Monica does not like losing.
No, Monica does not like losing at all. She's about as competitive as a Martin.
About. Almost.
Almost.
Not
almost.
Quite there.
Your dad and I, I remember, that there's some Thompson in there too. Thompson's got some competitive in him too, because me and your dad used to make somebody cry at every family reunion. It seems like one way or another.
Oh man.
All right. So as they get into the challenge, I thought it'd be fun to just go through and list the thing I loved about this episode the most. Terry was that you got to learn even some more things about these characters that you'd spent now 4 seasons getting to know, and you get to see some of the interesting things, and it's stuff that when people that you know and love, you've got the dirt on them. Uh-huh. You know, like the little things that they might be embarrassed by. You know, and so the first question out of the gate is, what is Monica's biggest pet peeve? Do you remember the
animal
answer?
Animals dressed as humans.
Animals dressed as humans. This one I laughed at. What phenomenon does Chandler say scares the bejesus out of him?
Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance.
Yes, and then Joey's like, the Irish jig guy? Yeah. His legs flail about as if it's independent from his body. And so it's just, that's what I'm saying. This episode is perfect. It is absolutely 100% perfect. Flawless. Next question goes back to the guys. And this is Ross and Monica's grandmother died. You were at her funeral. Name that grandmother. And Joey's like, Nana? He's like, Chandler's like, she had a name. And then he guesses Althea. And I love the little stress-induced. Althea, he says, I took a shot. You're shooting with Althea? Althea's correct. Nice shooting. So, I love it. Next question up for the ladies is, every week the TV guide is delivered to Chandler. What is the name on the mailing label?
Ah, Chandler Bing. Wait, it's Chandler Bing. Nope.
No. It's Chandler Bong.
And Chandler says, no, it's... Miss Chandler Bong. Miss
Chandler Bong.
That was the part where the writers had said David Schwimmer and Marta Kaufman were the only ones, when they read that aloud at the table read or whatever, that they were the only ones that thought that was hilarious. No one else that really thought it was funny. But
oh, really?
I thought that was hilarious. That's Everybody great. Thought it was great.
I like the way he says it, Miss Chandler Bong. So... Next question was, what is the name of Chandler's father's Vegas all-male burlesque? And then Terry, what was the answer?
Monica stands up and says, Viva Las Vegas!
And Chandler's like, regrettably, that is correct. And so I love the responses, too, when people get the answers on them. You know, it's funny because we'll see it with Joey's reactions, too. One of the most underrated aspects of the entire series, the entire 10-year run, is Joey's facial expressions.
Yep.
He has the best facial expressions on the show. And I love him because, like, even when they get a question right on him, in the lightning round, he still's like, oh, yeah, he just laughs. And then, you know, oh, but maybe I'm not supposed to be happy they got that right. So those were the only questions we saw of the regular round. And when we come back to lightning round, first up is the fellas. They win. And the fellas get to go first. And they go through lightning round super fast. What is Monica's nickname as a field hockey goalie?
Big Fat Goalie.
Big Fat Goalie. Rachel claims that this is her favorite movie.
Dangerous Liaisons.
Her real favorite movie is
Weekend at Bernie's.
Weekend at Bernie's. I just love that. That's just a great... That was written perfect because, you know, especially the way Joey delivers a line where he points at her like, Weekend at Bernie's.
I got you. It's, I know, awesome. That.
This is another one. What part of her body did Monica get a pencil stuck in when she was 14? And Jenner's like, oh. And then he whispers to Ross, he's like, ew, no!
Monica's ear. Face when he says that. Yeah. It's like, what the heck?
That's what they even with the stuff that they're not saying, the writers on this episode, we're knocking it out of the park just with because they're letting your own brain make the joke. I thought that was great. Last question that the guys get, Monica categorizes her towels. How many categories are there? Fancy, guest.
Fancy guest.
Oh, 11. And he's like, 11 is correct.
Right as time goes out.
Right as time expires. We're interested, before we even get to the girls, we'll talk for a second about the 30-second time limit on these lightning rounds was a little bit stretched out.
Yeah,
I think the guys got 40 seconds, and the girls got a full minute.
Oh, gee. I didn't even think to look at that.
Yep, the adding it up, it wasn't 30 seconds. It was the girls got quite the advantage and still failed. As we go around now, let's just run through the lightning round questions before we get to have some fun with it real quick. Just so we get them out there, because this was the best part of the whole show. The ladies are up. I'll just let you answer. You read the questions. I'll give the answers this time.
All right. What is Joey's favorite food?
Sandwiches.
Chandler was how old when he touched a woman's breast?
14.
19.
Oh, 19. Thanks, dude.
Joey had an imaginary friend when he was a boy. What was his name?
Maurice.
What was his job?
Space cowboy.
What is Chandler Bing's job?
Oh, I know this. It has to do with numbers. Something to do with numbers. He carries a briefcase.
10 seconds. You need this to win.
You lose the game. He's a transponding. He's a transponster.
That's not even a word.
I tell you what, we could not do that justice. So
not
what
even
I've decided
bit.
Is what we're going to just listen to the girls section of that lightning round. All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Oh. 30 seconds on the clock. 5 correct questions wins the game. The lightning round begins now. What is Joey's favorite food?
Sandwiches.
Correct. Chandler was how old when he first touched a girl's breast?
14?
No, 19.
Thanks, man.
Joey had an imaginary childhood friend. His name was...
Maurice.
Correct. His profession was...
Oh, space cowboy.
Correct. What is Chandler Bing's job?
Oh, gosh. This has something to do with numbers and processing. And he carries a briefcase.
10 seconds. You need this or you lose the game.
It has something to do with transponding. Oh, he's a transponster! That's not even a word! I can get this! Oh, no! Yes!
All right.
What a
that is
scene.
Good stuff right there. That no that she lets out has got to be one of the greatest, you know, theatric, dramatic no's in the history of entertainment. I mean, it's up there with Vader's no at the end of episode 3 when he finds out that Padme is dead. That whole no. But so.
Or Michael Scott's no when Toby comes back to the office.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. I didn't even think of that one, but that's a good one, too. Yeah, that one is awesome. That's one of my favorite moments from that series, from that sitcom, is when he sees that, no, no, God, no, no. I love it.
I love that cold open. That was good.
All right, so the boys win, and they get the apartment. Rachel freaks out. She makes Monica go over there and try to get their apartment back, and Monica loses the mattresses. I'd love to know what questions they were asking for or what competition went down for her to lose the mattresses.
That's what I was wondering, too, when I was rewatching. I'm like, what did they bet over there? What was the game? Because she would have whooped them at foosball. Or, yeah. Foosball.
You know they didn't give that up because they know that she would. That's why they don't let her play. Because that happened with Richard. But I've always been curious about what the contest was that they lost to lose the mattresses. And then, of course, the friends fight as they're moving over. And then Phoebe breaks in with the news that she has taken a pregnancy test. And she is, in fact, pregnant. And we get that great moment from her brother says, "My sister's having my baby."
Before that, she was sitting upside down in Monica's chair in her living room there, yes, trying to encourage the embryos to attach. And she was singing a song to the little embryos. And it goes like this. Are you in there, little fetus? In 9 months, will you come greet us? I will buy you some Adidas.
That's a very good rendition there, Terry. You have a lovely singing voice.
Thank you. Before she finds out she's pregnant, Frank Jr. comes in. That's her brother, and says, "Hey, we got you a gift. It's a lollipop and a home pregnancy test." And Monica said, "Don't mix those up. You could really ruin that lollipop."
I like how Phoebe's trying to temper down the expectations. Like, look, there's a long shot we may not know. Just because I'm not pregnant now doesn't mean I won't get pregnant later. You know, just try not to put all your faith in this right now for my sanity. And then they're just like, thanks.
Oh, man. It's good stuff.
Definitely. Like I said, this episode is flawless from beginning to ending. It was perfectly written.
Yeah.
And you know what's crazy, too, is the best performance in this episode, I think, has to go to Monica.
Oh, yeah. She was really, really intense in this episode.
And it is. It's because it all plays off of our understanding, even early as, you know, that's been established early on in this whole series of how competitive she is. And for her to lose in such a spectacular fashion, mm-hmm, had to just drive her. And she just plays that, like I said, that ending there of the lightning round when she's like, "That's not even a word." And then the no is this perfect. And you know what's funny, what's really weird is that, like, in this episode, it's obviously she carries it. She's the only cast member who was never nominated for an Emmy.
That's surprising.
Yeah, I would have thought that each of them would have got at least one nomination over 10 years, but
somewhere.
She's the only one who was never nominated for an Emmy.
That has to hurt.
Yeah, it's got to sting a little bit, doesn't it? Just a couple more points about the actual episode before we start getting into our other fun stuff about it. There were four categories of questions. There was fears and pet peeves, ancient history, literature, and it's all relative. Now, I don't remember. Were there any questions asked from literature? The only one I can think of for literature was the TV Guide question.
Yeah, that's the only one that even makes sense.
But there was six questions that he had put on that whiteboard that were from the literature category. What could possibly have been the other questions?
I mean, the only thing I could think would be, what's Rachel's favorite book? What was it from the other episode? I can't remember.
Little Women.
Little Women. So, I mean, that could
be. Joey read The Shining.
What, The Shining? He knew The Shining.
He read The Shining, and that was the one book that he read, and he would keep it in the freezer. Because when he would read it and get scared, and he would put it in the freezer, He's like, "Cause are you safer with any? You know, you're safe when it's in the freezer." He's like, "Well, safer." So that could have been one. What was the name of the book? Or I don't know if it would. I don't know if they ever told us the name of the book, but it was a later on. It was when Rachel was rooming with Joey in the later seasons, and he found her romance novel.
Oh yeah,
when he went to take a nap with the
what erotic was the romance novel?
Yeah, with the vicar.
The vicar. Yeah.
Joey, where'd you learn that word? So those are ones that could have been in the literature category. I would have liked to know more in the fears and pet peeves. I think we would have had a good time with that. So we only got two questions there, Monica's pet peeve and Chandler's fear. What would you think some of the other fears or pet peeves questions could have been?
Oh, gosh.
Remember, it's only season four, so I guess we'd have to go on what had been revealed at that point.
You know Joey's got to be afraid of plenty of things. I'm trying to think of what he could have been afraid of, though. But yeah, it would be what would be Joey's biggest fear, because you know some things freaked him out. Right. Yeah, Chandler's funny one being the Lord of the Dance, but I'm trying to think of what Joey would actually be scared of.
His another Chandler later on we find out was afraid of dogs.
Oh yeah, that's
like
right.
Dogs. So that could have been dogs. That would have been interesting to see like some of the other people's pet peeves. I would have liked a pet peeve on each one of them, but then they had to do an hour episode for this one, and I don't think they wanted to do that. Although I would have loved it.
Of course.
It's all relative. We end up going on to meet some of Rachel's... We meet both of Rachel's sisters later on, but we could have gotten some info on them in this episode. And then Ancient History. We actually do get a full blown-out episode of Ancient History.
Yeah.
And the one with the one that could have been. No, I'm sorry, the one with the flashback.
Yeah, and then there was a Thanksgiving episode where they flashback pretty hard.
Yeah, so we kind of get that, and so that's pretty cool. Any other thoughts on the questions left on the board, Terry?
I don't think so. I would be very, very interested to find out what the rest of them are as a big Friends fan.
Right. This is Friends widely considered to be one of, if not the best sitcoms of all time. It's a top five in probably anybody's list. Right up there with what we said the other ones. I would say up there with The Office. I Love Lucy, Seinfeld, and Cheers. I think those, you probably, as far as popularity, a lot of people would say, you know, The New Heart, Mary Tyler Moore. Well, I guess The Honeymooners, man. It'd be hard to keep The Honeymooners out.
There's a lot of them that were big. Frasier went 11 seasons. Married with Children went like 11 seasons. Simpsons has gone 1,000 seasons, I think. They're creeping up on it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So very, very, very popular sitcom.
yeah, for sure.
For Generation X, this is our show. Even more so than Seinfeld. Friends were, you know, we were the same age, roughly, as them. This was the first breakout Gen X, you know, motif type of sitcom that we had. And it was, you know, we grew along with them to an extent. Yeah. And so that was always, Friends has always had a special place in my heart. I've loved it from, you know, when I first started watching it. And it's been fun. You know, you feel like you belong in that group, like you know them so well. Over 10 years of excellent writing, you feel like you know them. You feel like you are one of their friends.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely a good show. Definitely a good show.
And, of course, we've already both declared that this was our favorite episode from that show.
There's another quote from that episode that I actually wrote down I wanted to say. Was when Rachel is just pretending like, oh, you actually thought we were going to give up the apartment? We were just messing around. And Joey says... she was like, it was just a stupid bet. He said, you can't just ignore the bet. It's a bet. You bet a bet, and if you lose a bet.
Lose a bet. Like I said, Joey is so underrated in that cast. Matt LeBlanc, now here's the thing, too. He was perfectly designed to play that one character. And he didn't have as much success as the other ones have had in other endeavors. He did have a reality show had to do with cars that I think he did was well received, But the Joey spinoff tanked. It was unwatchable. But, like I said, he is the underrated star of that show in a lot of ways. His facial expressions and his gestures. I love the way when someone, you know, he would learn something, his eyes would go real wide. That was awesome.
When he figured something out.
Yeah. So we both agree that this is our favorite episode. So, of course, that leads us to question the Mount Rushmore of Friends episodes. I'll tell you what. I'll go first on this one.
Okay.
And then we'll see which ones of ours line up. And we'll make our case for our Mount Rushmore against the other's Mount Rushmore.
I have a feeling we'll possibly share two.
I think we will share two. Two is my guess, too. So that's what I was thinking, we'll be 50-50 on this. But okay, obviously, the embryos, this one, we share.
Of course.
My next one up is the one with the prom video.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. Okay. That one, of course, is one where, you know, Ross, this is post-Ross making out his pros and cons list for Rachel and her finding it, and he still wants to have the shot, and she's having nothing to do with it, and she finally snaps on him at Central Perk saying, we are never going to happen, except that. And it's really, there's a lot of tension between them, and Monica's parents come by for a visit, drop off some of her stuff, and in the box is a videotape, and it's Rachel and Monica getting ready for their prom. Rachel's date appears to be a no-show, so Ross gets himself all ready to go, and then he shows up, and Ross is left devastated, and this was enough to sway Rachel back to his corner, and she walks over and kisses him as Phoebe says, oh, there, she's your lobster. Yep. And so that was the gist of the one with the prom video. Next up, we'll go with my next one on my Mount Rushmore after the prom video is the one where everybody finds out.
Yeah,
you remember that one?
That's a good one. That is a very good. I don't know why I didn't pick that one. That would. I almost kind of want to cross one off and put that there because I liked that episode quite a bit.
Yeah. Ugly naked guy moves out across the street from their apartment. Ross has gotten that apartment. He's going over to look at it, and come to find out, you can see inside Monica and Rachel's apartment from ugly naked guy's apartment. And Phoebe catches Monica and Chandler, and she's like, Chandler and Monica, my eyes. I love that episode. I love the, they don't know we know, they know we know. So, <Yeah. laughs> and then my fourth pick for my Mount Rushmore is the one that could have been, the two-parter, where there's an alternate universe, and I loved that episode.
Yeah, it was a fun episode.
The best joke from that episode is when Rachel, who went ahead and married Barry in this alternate universe, is wanting to hook up with Joey, and she's like, I wish we could just be like on a break. And so she would have the moral positioning to go hang out with soap opera star Joey Tribbiani. Now, did we have another one that matched?
We actually did not.
I didn't hear you chime in, so okay. So I thought we would have another one that matched.
There's so many episodes to choose from.
Right. Let's hear Terry's Mount Rushmore of Friends episodes.
Well, we had the embryos. The one where no one is ready.
Oh, that was so close to being one of the ones I was
going
to.
Oh, my gosh.
That was my next in.
I loved it so much. I learned the term commando there from that episode. Yep. Going commando.
You don't go commando in another man's fatigues.
Oh, my gosh. And then Joey walks in wearing all of Chandler's clothes. It'd be a shame if I were doing if I were going commando. Maybe I'd like do some lunges.
How it just ended up being a war between Joey and Chandler over the seat.
Yeah. He takes the cushions with him off to the other apartment.
The cushions are the essence of the chair. That's right. I'm taking the essence.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great one. That's a great choice.
That was a good one. I like that one. My next one, just because I love the line and also the moment at the end of the show was the one with the birth mother, which is from season 10, episode 9.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's when Joey's out on a date, and his date reaches across and takes some of his fries, and Joey is absolutely mortified. And I can't remember who it was that asked Rachel, "Oh, yeah, Joey doesn't share food."
Yep.
And then they start talking back and forth, and finally just Joey says, "Joey doesn't share food."
I love that.
That was great.
The great scene. Oh, go ahead.
That was like my favorite part is he goes out on another date, and because with a suggestion of having a plate of fries for the table to share, she sees something else on his plate, and then she keeps reaching over to try to get it, and he keeps moving the plate, and then he explains to her that he doesn't share food and he doesn't like people taking stuff off his plate. And then they order dessert, and there's only one chocolate cake left, and his date has to go to the bathroom, and she looks at him and says, "This better be here when I get back." And he's just staring at it like a dog, you know, just staring at someone, their owner, eating food. And it cuts back to her walking back in, and his face is completely covered in chocolate, Matilda style. And he's like, "I'm not even sorry."
That's a great line.
I love that.
He's like, "Yeah, I'm not even sorry." I just love it. That was perfect, Joey. All right, so that's another great choice.
I enjoyed that episode. The last one I have here is the one in Vegas. I loved the Vegas episode. I love how Joey's standing there as a Spartan and taking pictures with people. Phoebe chasing around this little old lady who keeps taking all her jackpots on the slot machines. And then you got Ross and Rachel who get really drunk. And because Rachel fell asleep on the airplane after embarrassing Ross, so Ross decided to draw over her face. And so now she's walking around the hotel and the airport with a mustache on her face. And So she can't go anywhere because there's a permanent marker on her face. So they get just super drunk in the hotel room and then finally leave. And they both have stuff written all over their face by this point. And side note there, you got Monica and Chandler who have been together for a year now. And they decide that they're going to get married. And right as they're about to walk into the Vegas wedding chapel, who comes busting out as newlyweds? Super inebriated Ross and Rachel.
I love, too, how they walk out the door of the chapel and they both go separate directions.
Yeah, that's another great part. But, yeah, that was a nice cliffhanger for the next season after that, season 6.
Those are solid choices. Solid. I was surprised we didn't have another one overlap, but like we said, you know, this is there was a lot of episodes to choose from, a lot of great episodes. But the embryos episode, the one with the embryos, like I said, I put that up there with one of the best sitcom episodes of all time.
Yeah.
And that's across every show. For me, that one's right up there with the likes of. Do you remember how big of a Seinfeld fan were you?
See, not terribly, but I mean, there's a couple guys at work that talk Seinfeld all the time, so when I get there in the morning, sometimes I'll have it on TBS, and it'll be playing some episodes, so I'll be catching.
There was one Seinfeld episode that stuck out to me more than anything else, is when Kramer had was going, I guess it's more of a sitcom moment, but Kramer was hitting golf balls into the ocean, or into the East River, and the whole thing centered about that, and then at the end he's telling the story about how he was lying to a woman to tell her that he was a marine biologist. And a beached whale came, and this woman goaded him into trying to help the whale, and what they found in the blowhole was a golf ball. And he holds it up and at the end, and then Kramer's like, a hole in one. So I loved that episode. Dinner party from The Office.
Oh, that's a very cringeworthy episode of The Office, but it gets better with age. The first time I watched it, I was uncomfortable. I felt uncomfortable in my own skin watching it. It was just so cringe inducing. It was tough. But then now I've watched it multiple times, I start to appreciate the comedy behind everything.
Oh yeah, that is definitely a classic.
Yeah, the deleted scenes and the bloopers on that one are really, really funny.
I've listened. I know you've listened too to the Office Ladies, And when they, I don't know if you've gotten to the episode, the dinner party episode.
No, but that's one of the new ones, right?
Yeah. And I listened to it, and just it's worth even skipping ahead if you're trying to go in order. It's worth skipping ahead just to hear that one, because okay. It's so good, the backstory of how hard it was to film some of those scenes. And I got then too with the other one that another great sitcom episodes is the Vita Vita Vegemin from I Love Lucy.
Yeah,
where she's doing the advertisement for the, and it's got alcohol in it, yeah. And she keeps doing takes, and she just progressively gets loaded.
Yeah, that's an episode that still holds up. The chocolate episode where they're working.
That's a great one.
Yeah, those still hold up today. Anybody could pick those up and watch them, and just it's a riot.
All right, so we did the Rushmore episodes, but let's talk about the Mount Rushmore of just Friends moments.
Yeah,
you have your Mount Rushmore ready. We'll let you go first on this one. Mount Rushmore of favorite Friends moments.
Well, it's kind of hard because it's three of them are from my favorite episodes. So, the moment Chandler and Joey won the apartment. Just because you hear Monica's reaction and Chandler and Joey screaming in victory, it was a great one. Let's see here, and then like I said already, from the one where no one's ready, Joey putting on all of Chandler's clothes when he walks in, I just about died. I thought that was hilarious.
I love too the setup on that. The setup on that one was great because Chandler stole his underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joey looks at me and says, "You steal my underwear? I'm going to do the exact opposite to you."
What does that even mean?
Andrew's like, "What? What's that mean? You're going to show me my underwear?" And Joey's like, "Opposite means opposite." And Chandler's like, "He's got nothing."
I loved it. This one actually did not come from my other choices. Was when Monica popped out from under the covers when in London. I love
that's
that.
That's one of mine. We share one.
Wow. I thought that caught me off guard first time I watched it because I just did not see it coming. No one saw it coming. And, Joey's excited that he loves London, and Chandler looks like he just woke up, and he's just laying there, and then Monica says, "Do you think he saw me?"
That was one of mine. Or, that's awesome. We shared one.
Wow. Last one was from the Joey eating his dessert. Eating the dessert of his date from that episode. That was just absolutely classic. The look on his face, just priceless.
Yep. All right, so that's a good. So your Rushmore was the guys winning the apartment.
Yep.
Joey
putting on all Chandler's clothes. Yep. Monica popping out under the covers, and Joey eating his date's dessert.
All right, so we shared the London one of Monica popping out. The rest of my Mount Rushmore was Rachel kisses Ross at the end of the prom video one.
Okay.
Even still now, you get that little, oh my gosh, yes. You know, they did that build up so well. That even having seen that episode, I don't even know how many times, mm-hmm. it still kind of gets, you get sucked into it a little bit.
They sold it pretty well.
Right. The backpacking through Western Europe story, when that's when they realize who came on to whom.
Was that the Ken Adams?
Yes, Ken Adams. Yep. Did I ever tell you about the time I was backpacking through Western Europe? And everybody's like, "Oh, it was you. You did it." And so that was my other one of the Mount Rushmore. And then the final Mount Rushmore is I struggled on this last one. I had two. I'm gonna put one in because that's how it goes, and then I'll give you my alternate, which was the next in.
Okay.
My one that makes it in is Pivot, just because it has been a part of my life. Anytime I'm moving something, ever since then, Pivot.
It's everybody. Yeah.
So that was the next one in, just because of the iconic and it gets used. But the one after that was the one that was next in that I had to bump, and only barely, was the routine. Do you remember the routine from the Dick Clark Rockin' New Year's Eve?
Oh gosh, yeah. Now I remember what you're talking about. Yep.
Yep. That was my next in.
So bad.
It was awesome. I laughed so hard when I first saw that episode, and I still laugh when I see them break into that dance routine, because the look on Ross's face through the whole routine, he's really into it, and I just loved it. Yeah. I loved everything about that one. You know, the thoughts on those?
No, and it's hard because there's about 1,000 different moments of this show that are hilarious. And if I went back and watched them all again, I might even change the complete list. I don't know. But just off the top of my head, those were ones that really stuck out to me.
That's the thing about Rushmore. That Rushmore face can change throughout. Like I said, I think the embryos will always be my favorite. But there are ones that I watch. That sweet spot for Friends is from years 2 through 8, where they just couldn't seem to miss. Yeah. Last couple seasons, you could tell there was, you know, they're running out of story ideas. I think the whole angle with Joey and Rachel was a little forced.
Yeah, but season 10, for that matter, was kind of forced too, because they wanted it to end with Ross and Rachel together, so they had to rewrite things to make it work right. The Joey and Rachel thing, I almost wish they would have done that maybe a little sooner. And
I think it would have had more impact, or even just left it alone. You know, I think they're, like I said, I think you could tell that they were just kind of running out of ideas. And but that seasons 2 through 8, there's a rare, I don't think they make any mistakes really. Let's do I thought this would be funny, because my brother, just for purposes of this, but did you have a favorite friend?
Chandler.
Chandler was your favorite.
I always feel like I can relate to him because it is the way that his, I wouldn't say smart humor, but yeah, he comes up with interesting ways of thinking about things, and I feel like I can relate with Chandler quite a bit, and I always thought he was hilarious.
I always loved Chandler. I think I related more with Ross.
Okay.
A little less confident. You know, feel a little bit outsiderish, but not too bad. Mm-hmm. I think I related more with Ross. And but here's the question that I used to go round and round. We're both happily married, love our wives very much. But if you had to marry one of the Friends' girls, who is it?
I don't know. Monica would drive me nuts, period. Rachel's daddy's little girl attitude kind of would probably drive me nuts. Phoebe's a little too quirky. So it would be a hard sell on all three of them. They're all hilarious. They all have their good qualities about them. But if I had to pick, Rachel.
See, I think for me, it's Phoebe. It's a slam dunk. It's not even a close run. There's not even a runner-up.
Yeah.
Here's a hot take. Now, understand that I think that as an actress, she did a great job. I think the character, she's hilarious. For my hot take coming up. Phoebe, I think let me finish my thought on Phoebe, is that because Phoebe is loyal no matter what. And she may be crazy, but she's big-hearted and weirdly enough, carries the least amount of baggage of any of them. So that's why I chose Phoebe. But my hot take on one of the other characters, Rachel, is that, like I said, she's funny, she's hilarious. Monica or Rachel's an important part of the Friends. I don't like her.
I tell you what, there's times when I just straight didn't like her in that show too. I mean, I felt that way about all of them at one point or another.
Right. I think Rachel was one of those things, like when I was single, Rachel was like, she had a lot of the traits that I did not like about girls that I would meet. You know, that pampered, princessy, you know, kind of think they're the be-all, end-all type of a deal. And that, I didn't like her very much. So
yeah, I'd say it was the later seasons where she kind of straightens up. Well, I guess she tries to straighten up right away. And you can tell it's a work in progress, and it gets better as the show goes on.
Yeah.
Like, she grows up more.
No, like I said, I think the character's hilarious. I think she's written hilarious. I think that ensemble is just, you can't imagine it being other people.
No.
it's hard to think about. And you know that I was looking, just looking random, you know, trivia stuff, internet, you know, research that Ellen auditioned for the role of Phoebe.
Really?
Yeah. That, you know, Barry, who played Rachel's fiance, he was actually originally supposed to be Ross.
I was going to say, of all people, I'd have to pick Ross for that one.
Yeah. And so it's you know, but the way they worked together and made it work, you're so happy that you got to experience it.
Yeah.
And even after, as of 5 years ago, was the last research I saw on this. This is before the streaming wars really changed the game. They were still making, each cast member was still making $20 million a year.
Sick.
Off of the syndication rights from mm-hmm. Friends. I don't know how that's changed with the streaming services. I know that it was on Netflix for a while, and Netflix paid a lot of money to keep it, and a certain percentage of that would go to the cast, and now it's on HBO Max. And so I don't know how it works now, but they're still making a load of money off of that show, even after all this time. And so, which I think is pretty amazing for them.
Pretty impressive, for sure. Pretty impressive, yeah. There was a time I was going to say on a previous thought there was I didn't like Ross for a while. Yeah. Watching syndicated,
he gets a lot of heat too.
Yeah, he was just kind of annoying to watch for a while. But going back and watching it now, he doesn't annoy me like he did when I first ran through the show, because I watched it syndicated mostly, so I would see episodes chopped up, so I didn't really understand why he was acting a certain way and acting like a complete fool. But it all makes sense when you watch him in order.
Yeah. Ross had a rough go of it for a while.
Yeah.
which you know, and I think he was the biggest hearted of them all, you know. So, but yeah, he could be annoying. Sure. Any other final thoughts on Friends?
Well, there was one more quote from the episode. It was from early on when they tell them that they know more about, the men tell the women that they know more about them than they do about them. They bet Monica that they can name the remaining items in Rachel's bag from when she just went shopping. And they got six guesses. They had to get all five of them right with six guesses. And they guessed right off the bat apples, and then tortilla chips, diet soda, and yogurt. And then they're trying to think of the last one, and Chandler whispers into Joey's ear, and he's like, No, not for like another 2 weeks.
Yeah, that was great. That was very good. And the look on the girl's face is like, ugh, the disgust on their face that Joey tracked their cycle.
Yeah, because he knows so much about them.
Right. What a great sitcom. I know eventually we're going to get to at least one Office episode. I can't wait for that too, because in my head, those two duke it out. And any given time frame, I'd have one of them either one or two. I love The Office. I can rewatch it. I think it's because because Friends got a head start in my head, I have a little bit more burnout as far as like watching shows. Like I haven't seen The Office episodes as many times as I've seen the Friends episodes mm-hmm. yet. So sometimes I feel like, oh yeah, The Office, that's my favorite. But then I do go back, like here this week, I've been on a Friends run and reminded myself how much I love that show.
It's funny. It's more, I think, obvious humor. Which, and you have the laugh track to go along with it, which kind of guides an audience on when they should be laughing, which is, it's fine. But for me, The Office is the winner there because of the smart humor. The details that they go into and you find new details every time you watch a show.
Oh, yeah.
And I've watched it every episode 20 times probably, and yeah, there's still times I'm like, hey, did you ever notice that? And tell Sarah, hey, did you see that? And one thing Netflix was doing there in the last year they had it, I felt like they were adding deleted scenes just so you had maybe another minute or two of episode in there. And I don't remember them doing this. And then you're like back in there watching it again. And then now you got Peacock, who's got the super fan episodes. They only have season 3, and that's it for some reason. But all those episodes are about 30 to 35 minutes long, and they're just chock full of all sorts of good stuff that you didn't get to see the first time around. So it just makes it like you're watching it for the first time again. With
absolutely. Yeah, I think I watched the first one, episode 1 of the supersized episodes.
Yeah.
And but what I did go through was watch season 2 through 9's blooper reels in a row.
They're great. What was I going to say about that? The super fan episodes. Dang. I'll come back to it. It was good stuff. I mean,
all right. If that's all we've got on Friends right now, once again, that was the one with the embryos. To close out our podcast this week, we have a very tight matchup still going on the most dominant female athletes. Serena Williams has pulled ahead of Simone Biles by, I think, one vote right now as of the recording. And the importance of that is that whoever wins that matchup, whoever the winner ends up being, is going to be a 4 seed in the men's bracket.
Okay.
And so I wanted to see, honestly, Terry, when I made the decision, I really thought Serena was going to run away with it. And I wanted to see how she would match up against some of the guys. And Simone Biles has come out as, you know, you have to consider it as an underdog and has a chance to take it.
Very much so. I was really shocked by it, but yeah, good for her.
So let's talk about the men's bracket for just a couple minutes before we sign off here. I finalized the number ones on the men's side. And you tell me what you think. Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Muhammad Ali.
All right.
Tiger Woods. And Wayne Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky, yeah. I think those are pretty good top four there. Ali was not only amazing for his skills in the ring, but for his mouth outside the ring. And that was another, he was a big draw, and that's one thing that made him great. Did he have the best record ever? No. But he lost a couple matches here. And how many did he lose altogether?
You know what? I don't know.
Not off the top of my head, but yeah. He wasn't undefeated or anything, but he was just very influential as far as boxing went. People were interested in boxing.
While he was at his prime, he was pretty much untouchable.
Yeah, he was pretty great. And yeah, there's a laundry list of others that could make that
claim. Yeah, well, let's see. I'll go through the top four in each region. We'll go through each the ones, the twos, and threes, and fours, and we'll tell you how. You can tell me what you think. So those are my number ones: Jordan, Ali, Woods, and Gretzky. The number twos are Jim Brown.
Now, why Jim Brown?
He is probably the greatest football player in the history of the NFL.
Think so.
Yeah, I think it, and I because he dominated, and too, it's like I said, it's hard to compare athletes from different sports. That's why I settled on the most dominant. When Brown was playing, he was so far in front of every other running back that there was no comparison.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of people who think he may have been the best player in NFL history too. So Jim Brown, number two. Tom Brady.
He's a number two. Pick there. Yeah. Yeah.
Could be controversial, but the dude's won how many Super Bowls now?
Hey, 17, 18,000. I don't know. Yeah. No, seven.
He's going to be playing when he's 60. So I have Brady as number two. Michael Phelps.
All time best swimmer. Just not an argument there.
And like I said, when you win, he won, what was it, 8 gold medals at 1 Olympics? That puts you in the category.
Everybody had their eyes on the TV when Michael Phelps was gone.
Yeah, it was a phenomenon.
Everybody knows who Michael Phelps is, and nobody watches swimming at all.
All right, then the next one on my number twos, to round out the number twos, is Babe Ruth.
Yeah, Babe Ruth not being a number one is not...
He would have been my next in on the number one.
Yeah, he's right there, and he is arguably the best baseball player ever.
And the only reason I didn't make Ruth a number one was because he, and this is going to sound like I'm being too sensitive, but because he didn't play against the best players always. There was, you know, It was still segregated at that point.
Yeah.
And so it would be interesting to see. Now he's, you know, phenomenal, but I do agree that he's probably one of the best baseball players who's ever lived.
Yeah, nobody hit home runs back then.
Yeah. I put Gretzky up there because your average person can name several baseball players, but unless you're not a hockey fan, a lot of people would be hard pressed to name another hockey player besides Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, and he did it all. He was unstoppable. If you ever go back and watch his Gretzky highlights, even though you don't like hockey, you'll be very impressed about how good he really was.
Right.
He owned that ice.
So those were the twos. Jim Brown, Tom Brady, Phelps, and Babe Ruth. Number threes. Jack Nicklaus.
Jack Nicklaus was just unstoppable. He was winning. He won the Masters in, like, 1986 at, like, 46 years old, and he was still getting it done. He still has
the most majors wins of any golfer in history. Yeah. Are you offended, or I guess offended is too strong a word, yeah, would you argue against Tiger Woods being placed higher than Jack Nicklaus?
No. Tiger came right out of the gate just guns blazing, and he had to deal with multiple injuries throughout his career that held him up. Had he been healthy every single year, he might be at 18 all-time majors, which is where Jack Nicklaus is. Tiger Woods in second at 15, which is still pretty awesome. And he just won the Masters 2 years ago. And, yeah, that was quite a comeback story. And he's, what, 40, 43, 44, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, still getting it done. Just okay. Keep your hat on because you look weird with it off.
And stay away from Waffle House waitresses. All right, moving along. The next number three is Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
Fastest man alive.
That dude is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Was it him that the guy was on a Segway right behind him and wasn't paying attention and drove right into him?
Yep.
It's like, how bad would that guy feel taking out the world's fastest runner?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, Usain Bolt, I think, earns the number three because he makes it look effortless, and he runs that fast and makes it look easy. Here we're gonna get probably a little bit more controversy. In the number three spot, Peyton Manning.
I don't think that's controversial at all. And for the longest time, I thought it was a Manning-Brady show of who the best quarterback was. Manning he was so smart, and he was comfortable staying in that pocket, whether or not he had good linemen or not. He could hit his target dang near every time. He was smart. He knew how to read a field. He knew how to do everything. He was a fantastic quarterback.
Like I said, it's about being dominant, and yeah, he dominated the quarterback play like I think few others have.
Yeah,
he may be the most technical, talent-wise, best quarterback ever.
Right.
But like I said, we're not just talking about best athlete; we're talking about most dominant. And of course, you got to give Brady the nod over him because he's got so many rings. Here's another one that could be a little controversial, but I'll defend my decision. And the final number three is Jerry Rice.
All-time leading receiver. It's hard to argue with that.
Even as pass happy as the NFL has become, his records will probably not be broken. That says a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you have any problems with Jerry Rice being a three?
No, I got a fun stat here that I'm bringing up right now. Jerry Rice has the most career yards on receptions by a 40-year-old player with 1,211. And, I'm trying to, god dang it, only three, no. No, it's only three players in NFL history caught a pass in their 40s. And, all right, so you're talking about, dang it, where is it? Show me the, okay. And the other two, who do you think they are? The other two people that caught a pass in their 40s.
In their 40s. Steve Largent, did he play that long?
Nope.
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady is one of them.
Okay. And George Blanda?
Brett Favre.
Brett Favre? Oh, God.
Brett Favre and Tom Brady are the only other two players in NFL history to catch make a reception in their 40s other than Jerry Rice.
Wow.
And Jerry Rice was
1,200
still,
yards?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was 42 years old when he caught 8 receptions, 145 yards, and a touchdown for the Seahawks, I believe.
All right. Yeah, that's insane. That's insane. All right, so going on, those are the number threes. Nicholas, Usain Bolt, Peyton Manning, and Jerry Rice. Now, like I said, I'm throwing in the winner of the women's round in a number four seed just to see how they fare. But the other three number fours are Ted Williams.
Yep. Teddy Ballgame was just all-star whole career.
Yeah.
He was great.
He's the only person, I may be saying this wrong, he's the only person whose career average is over 400?
No. Career average all-time is Ty Cobb with 367.
Okay, what was I thinking? Where did I get that number from?
I think he might be the last person that had an over 400 average for a season.
For the season?
Yeah, okay. And he did. I think he did multiple times.
Okay. That's what I was thinking then. Not career average, but maybe in the season. Probably in the conversation for one of the best baseball players ever.
Yeah. He's really good.
All right, next up on the number fours would be Iron Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson, for sure. Man, I've gone back and watched old Tyson videos on YouTube, and man, that dude.
He just destroyed people with the blink of an eye.
So dominant. So dominant. And it was just scary. I would never want to get hit by Mike Tyson ever. And then he comes out in his 50s, and he does it again. He didn't win the match, but, I mean, dang, that was pretty impressive.
He was at his prime. That's as most dominant as you'll see an athlete, I think.
Yeah. He wasn't even that big either.
No.
No, he was just getting there crushing people. I can't believe he could hit that
hard.
Scary,
scary man.
Yeah. He just looked angry when he came. Like, he wanted to kill you. And he had the eye of the tiger.
All right, next up on the number fours. I hated doing it. You made me do it.
Yeah, well.
I didn't want to do it. LeBron James.
LeBron James, man.
Defend your pushing me to put LeBron James in the top four.
Well, let's take a look here. I think I sent you some stats on him to kind of sell it a little bit more. Let's see here. Third all-time scoring currently. He's still not done. He has a chance of being the all-time leading scorer if he plays well the next few seasons. He's 8th all-time in assists, 13th all-time steals, 42nd all-time rebounds. All around, that's pretty impressive. He's 5th all-time free throws. Was he as good as Jordan? I think Jordan can make plays happen in a way that no one else ever can. So I don't think he's better than Jordan, but he's an all-around great teammate. And, yes, he only has, one title?
He's got three.
He's got three, three titles. And he doesn't have as many as Jordan. He's lost a ton. He's lost a ton of them. So, but he always has a winning team. The team that he's playing for seems to always do well. Currently with the Lakers, not so much, but that's kind of been injury-ridden. He's got a lot. Let's see here. He's a 17-time NBA All-Star. He's a four-time NBA Finals MVP. So he's won the championship four times. He's Rookie of the Year and in all sorts of stuff.
The numbers. LeBron brings the numbers to the table.
He brings the numbers.
Because,
yeah, go ahead.
The hesitation always is because it's a generational thing at this point.
That's exactly it.
Where it's generational because Gen X and older, we're Team Jordan all the way. Because we grew up watching him play. He changed how basketball was played. And he is still the only person to ever win a scoring title and Defensive Player of the Year in the same season. And Jordan was a stone-cold assassin. He would cut your heart out. He had a absolute psychotic aversion to losing.
Yeah.
And his drive and his competitiveness are legendary. Probably to a detriment in his personal life, I would imagine.
Sure.
But he on the court, it was like watching a work of art in progress.
Yeah.
LeBron is a better athlete, I think, than Jordan was. LeBron's a freak of nature athletically.
He is.
But he plays to that ability, and he obviously will go down as probably a Mount Rushmore of NBA players of all time by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah.
I figure too that, you know, but here's where it gets me. It's like I said, Jordan, he adapted his body to change his body in the middle of his career. If you watch Jordan in his first three-peat, he's kind of skinnier. Look at his second three-peat, he's beefy, muscular. So you can't tell me that Jordan wouldn't be able to adjust to today's NBA. Jordan in today's NBA, with those rules, would average over 40 points a game.
Yeah, even when he came probably back in his late 30s and played for the Wizards, he still was averaging over 20 points a game. And
I'll tip my hand here a little bit. Michael Jordan is the number one overall seed in this tournament.
Yeah, I can get on board with that for sure. Like you said,
some of the other highlights. Go ahead.
It's a generation thing. Michael Jordan was our favorite. We saw how he played, but I had to stand back and respect LeBron. I can't let the numbers, they can't be swayed. He put those numbers up. He's good, and I've come to accept that he's good, and because I didn't want to like him at first, like everybody else that's from the Jordan era. But the dude can produce.
The dude can ball, but he'll never be Jordan because it's just not Jordan.
Yeah, he makes his team better just by being on it. But Jordan did the same thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, some of the other highlights from this, because we're coming up on an hour and a half now on this pod, so we'll wrap it up here. We'll be back to this bracket, I'm sure, in the weeks to come as the tournament progresses. We'll talk about upsets and that sort of thing. But I try to do on some of these where I know enough is the 8 and 9 seeds. I like to match up people who are going to face each other in the first round, and to kind of make those interesting tough choices and those first round tough choices. And I've got four of those matchups going to be in this tournament. The first region was going to be the 8 and 9 matchup is Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell.
Oof, that is that's a tough one to call. I'd have to take Wilt the Stilt on that one I had a pick.
That's gonna be tough, man. I think I almost will ride with Russell just because of the championships. But Chamberlain with his 100 points in one game and his he dominated a league. Next up, Dale Earnhardt and Richard Petty will be the next 8 and 9 matchup.
I know you were an Earnhardt fan. Hard.
Oh, hardcore Earnhardt fan. Yeah. So you know where I almost made Earnhardt a 3 just because that was the number he drove on his car, but I couldn't justify it.
No.
When I was looking at the rest of the field.
Right. I didn't see Jeff Gordon on here anywhere.
He's not. I don't care. and the list that you've got, I've made some changes, so I don't know, you may be looking a little bit different. I've been adjusting it. The next first round matchup between 8 and 9 is going to be Walter Payton and Barry Sanders.
Payton.
I think that's a great matchup, though.
It is a great matchup. Barry retired too soon, probably would have broken his record.
You know who's not in the field?
Emmitt Smith.
Yep. You know why?
Why?
Because he didn't dominate. He has a rushing record, but he played behind an all-pro offensive line. Sanders and Payton played behind high schoolers and racked up those yards.
Yeah. And Emmitt Smith also stayed healthy for the majority of his career. So.
And so did Payton, and Sanders both did. But Emmitt Smith, he had the advantage of playing against an offensive line. I can't imagine what Payton or Sanders' career would have been like if they could have played behind that line.
Right.
Also because I hate the Cowboys.
There you go.
So, and then the last matchup of 8 and 9, so I think it'll be interesting to see, is Pete Sampras and Roger Federer.
One could argue Roger Federer should be much higher because of how much he's dominated over the last 15, 20 years. He's a stud in the tennis world, and he gets it done. And I personally think he should be over Pete Sampras. But we'll let the voters decide.
Yeah, there's a couple of these people that probably could be ranked higher, but I put them down to 8 and 9 just for that first round matchup. And
that'll be fun.
Yeah. And you even look at, I'm just going to read off some of the names that are above them. In the 5 through 7 spots, you got Cy Young, Mickey Mantle, Jesse Owens, Kobe Bryant, Carl Lewis, George Foreman, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Joe DiMaggio, Lawrence Taylor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Joe Montana.
Yeah.
Those are your fives through sevens. And that's a pretty nice little run of athletes there, too.
Yep.
Last thing we'll talk about real quick before we go is the play-in rounds.
Okay.
There's going to be 2 days of – there's a total of 8 play-in round matchups. And you know what? Maybe we won't. I'll tell you a couple of them that against your advice, I have Devin Hester in one of the play-in rounds. He's going to be going up.
I like Devin Hester, but no.
He's going up against Lance Armstrong.
Okay.
And Jimmy Johnson, the NASCAR driver.
Yeah. If people look past the steroids, they'll vote Lance Armstrong.
Yeah. Here's why Hester makes my list. For one, I'm a Bears fan.
Yeah, I know.
My game.
I know. Yeah. Another he who makes the brackets.
Right. Here's how I defend my decision. Nobody's ever been as dominant in a 2-season run in a kick return game ever.
2 seasons.
He changed the outcome of games. At that position, he's undeniably the best at that position in the history of the NFL.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what gets him in.
Yeah. One position.
I know you're against it.
I am. But it is what it is. You can't argue that. But yeah, definitely a play-in round, not a locked-in seed.
Right. A play-in round for sure. Yeah. Another one that'll be interesting for you, you'll be following this one closely, is this is a 15-seed play-in round. Sandy Koufax, Larry Bird, and Albert Pujols.
Oh, man. Yep, I got Pujols. Oh, man, you had to throw Larry Bird in there. I mean, God, Albert Pujols. Dang it, he should be higher. But Larry Bird is, it's hard to argue against Larry Legend. Watching old Larry Bird highlights is just amazing. But yeah, Pujols, as we talked earlier, has those numbers, then they don't lie. So,
you know, I'm looking at the other 15th seed play-in rounds. I may break those two up. That one seems especially loaded. Let me read the other 15-round play-ins to you and see. One is Tony Hawk, Alexander Carlin, and Bjorn Borg.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't going to know Bjorn Borg, unfortunately, but he was an absolute phenom in tennis. And but then everybody knows Tony Hawk and how he dominated the skateboarding world, and he is synonymous with skateboarding. So I see him taking that.
And then the second one is Rocky Marciano.
Oh, yeah.
Mariano Rivera and Jim Thorpe.
See, that's another one. A lot of people are probably going to know Mariano Rivera because of what he's done recently. Rocky Marciano was one of the most dominant boxers of all time.
If I'm not mistaken, not one of the best. One of the only heavyweights to ever have an undefeated record for his career.
Yep. But he was fighting guys back in the day, so who knows?
Yeah, for sure. And then the last 15 seed play-in is had a little fun with names on this one. Magic Johnson.
Okay.
Michael Johnson. Randy Johnson.
Wow. If I had to pick...
That's a stacked one, too.
If I had to pick, I'd say Randy Johnson. But Magic Johnson did a lot in the 80s. He did a lot of stuff in the 80s. And, yeah, when he ended up coming out with HIV, it just put a halt on his career. And he wasn't the same when he came back, but he was... He could handle that ball pretty well back in the 80s. And watching his old highlight videos are another one that just... Wow. It's impressive.
The hard thing for Magic is he wasn't the most dominant player on the team he was on.
No.
His career. So that's what hurts him a little bit.
Yeah, I mean...
He was great.
He was a great team player. He could get... He's read a court probably better than anybody. He could get the ball to the person that needed the ball at that time in the most fancy way possible. And it's beautiful.
So, yeah, those are the 15s. And it'll be tough. There are a couple other... We'll go with the 16s. Might as well. We're already
doing it. Might as well. Yeah. People want to keep listening. They can listen if they don't turn it off.
Yeah. The 16 seed play in rounds. First one up is Mario Lemieux, okay. Rafael Nadal, and Royce Gracie.
Oh, man. Royce Gracie, classic UFC fighter. He was
one of the first big, like, well-known UFC champions.
He got it going. He was one of the main ones. Him and Ken Shamrock, and Gracie, I think, came out victorious more often than not in those matches. And yeah, he really got that sport going. If it wasn't for him, they may not even have it. Who knows? And what were the other ones?
Mario Lemieux, Rafael Nadal.
Yeah, Super Mario, and then Rafael Nadal, which was Federer's nemesis for the entire time he was dominant. So, and Nadal's a good one.
All right. Second matchups for the play-in round for 16 seeds, Mario Andretti, Mike Trout, and Chuck Liddell.
Mario Andretti, all the way. Mike Trout still too young. Chuck Liddell was fun to watch.
He kind of fell off a cliff, though.
He did. That's,
MMA,
that's
man,
why.
They don't. There's not a downward slope for MMA.
Yeah,
it's you're number one. You're nobody.
that's it right there. He was fun to watch, but Mario Andretti was one of the most dominant kart racers ever.
I think you'll get you'll be torn on this next matchup for the next grouping here. Lionel Messi, soccer player. But here's where we're going to get into your neck of woods. Ken Griffey Jr., Alex Rodriguez.
Wow. A-Rod's got the numbers. I know he right at the end of his career, he started getting in trouble for roids and all that. But Griffey was, well, quote, a clean player that came out of the 80s and 90s. But then you got Lionel Messi, who's one of the greatest soccer players ever. He's one of the most dominant soccer players ever. So, that's as a baseball fan, I don't watch soccer, so I'd have to pick A-Rod or Griffey. And if we went by numbers alone, you got to go A-Rod. He was hitting bombs his whole career as a shortstop for most of it, and then he went to third base once he got traded. And yeah, he was. That's something else. Griffey, though, was just fun to watch. The swagger that Griffey had. He just get up there and just kind of do a shimmy and then hit the ball 450.
Oh yeah, I liked watching Ken Griffey Jr. play.
He was something to watch. He hit the 500th home run of his career against the Cardinals in Busch Stadium when he played for the Cincinnati Reds.
I have realized that I may have made a very, very big mistake. Because I saw the Lionel Messi, the soccer player. I realized I don't have Cristiano Ronaldo or David Beckham.
Oh yeah,
in this tournament.
Yeah, well, it's your tournament.
I have to make a couple changes.
Yeah, as long as you got Pele.
I do have Pele. I'm gonna have to write myself a note and see if I'm gonna have to make some changes. We already talked about the last one of the number 16s there. The Jimmy Johnson, Hester, and Lance Armstrong matchup. So we have to fudge a little bit of that. I can't believe I left off two of the most well-known soccer players of all time.
Yeah, well, it's okay.
Off the list. It's okay. I'm not a soccer fan, so it was harder for me to remember those guys.
We don't know soccer. This is America.
Right. There's one guy on here that I want to point out, just to briefly talk about. I wanted to rank him a lot higher, but I'm afraid this is going to be a wasted ranking because most people won't know him and may not even be interested in finding out, and that would be Josh Gibson. As a baseball guy, you're probably familiar with that name. He was widely considered to be the best player to ever play in the Negro Leagues and would have been competitive with the likes of like Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron and would put up those kind of numbers if he'd had a chance. And I want to make sure that his name got a little bit of due. Maybe somebody, you know, obviously he's been long since passed away. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see people get some more information about that guy.
For sure.
So, all right. Well, we have definitely stretched this podcast out long enough.
We're done with Friends like 100 minutes. 30 minutes ago.
Yeah. But, hey. If you have to listen to it in two parts, we do appreciate any listeners that we have. We are still learning how to do these. We're having fun with it. And any final thoughts, Terry?
No. Other than
all right, well,
next week We mentioned
we have.
Yeah, next week you mentioned it last podcast that our fourth episode that we did was Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and then I had to correct you and say no, it was Forrest Gump. But yes, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, it was such a good idea. We're going with Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You got to rewatch it. Take notes.
All right.
We're going to talk about it next week because that movie was classic.
That is a great movie. I have the great fan theory that I think we'll have to discuss and I'm sure you've heard of.
I have heard
we'll
of it.
Break we'll, it out.
I can't wait to talk about it.
All right. Well, I'm going to challenge you too. When you watch it this time, watch it with that fan theory in your thoughts and see if it changes how you watch the movie.
I will, and I think you introduced me to another fun movie fan theory was how Glinda the Good Witch was actually the evil witch the entire movie.
Yes.
That's a fun article to look up on crack.com.
Absolutely. All right, well, hey, we want to thank everybody for hanging out with us now for an hour and 40 minutes. We look forward to coming back and seeing us again next week as we will do a retro review on Ferris Bueller's Day Off. We're going to the Chi-Town for this one. My favorite city in the whole world. We want to thank everybody for listening, and we will see you next week. God bless you. Good night.
Good night.